Okay, this week is a very special week in our shul calendar. This Shabbos, we're going to be finishing Shas, not for the first, not for the second, but for our third cycle of Mishnah Yomis, which is a six-year undertaking. It's one of the great, wonderful achievements that I think makes our shul special. And given the fact that we've really been trying to highlight this for a very, very long time, I really want to take the opportunity tonight to do something a little bit different than we do throughout the Thursday nights, when we like to talk about Tanakh and the different personalities in Tanakh. Tonight, I'd like to return to a series that we've had throughout the pandemic, Profiles in Exile. And this evening, I'd like to talk about one particular profile in exile in honor of the Siyum Shas Mishnah Yomis. And that is, of course, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, the Kolzhin Glover Rav, the Rosh Hashiva of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, and more directly, for our purposes, the founder of the Mishnah Yomis movement. And so let's begin a little brief conversation to understand the place of this really sad character, individual who was a rather exciting Jewish historical character, but from the surface, somebody who doesn't get recognized that often in the process. Let's talk about Rav Aryeh Tzvi. He was born in Poland in 1884, and his father, Rav Chanuch Hendel, made his living as a tailor. So we're not talking about a guy who was born into the Hasidic Rebbehood and went on to discuss Hasidic Rebbehood. We're talking about the son of a tailor. And his mother passed away when he was 3 years old. So he begins life in a very difficult situation. And he gets sent to Cheder in Wolbrum, living by the relatives of his mother. So his father couldn't raise him. He grows up virtually an orphan. And he spends most of his formative years of development learning Torah in the Yeshiva Kantana of Amstav. And there, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Ephraim Tzvi Einhorn, recognized his unique abilities, and he took very special care in supporting the young man. He wanted to make sure that Rav Aryeh Tzvi would grow up both spiritually and physically nourished and taken care of. It's interesting to note that he was also a little bit of, according to the sources, he was recognized as a little bit of a troublemaker in the cheder. Not a surprise for somebody who's growing up, sort of at the whim of relatives. And still notwithstanding, it helps develop his sense of responsibility. It helps us develop his sense of creativity. And this is how he grows up until he turns about 13 years old. When he's 13 years old, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, the Kolzhin Glover, makes his way to the court of the Avnei Nezer. Now, you have to, we tend to focus a lot more, being of the non-Hasidic ilk, we tend to focus a lot more on Rosh Yeshivas and Yeshivahood. But we're talking about Poland in the 1800s, and there we're going to talk less about Yeshiva and Yeshivahood, but rather returning back to a theme we talked about in Elul when we talked about Hasidic courts and the understanding that a person who wanted to grow and live in a more spiritually nourished, Hasidic nourished for the soul, would go out and find his Rebbe, who would be identified by the town where the Rebbe was. And so at the age of 13, Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, so we're talking about the turn of the 90, into the 1900s, he makes his way to the court of the Avnei Nezer, Rav Avram Yehuda Bornstein. And he winds up with the Avnei Nezer in Sachachov in Poland. And Rav Ari Leib, or as he starts to get known, at least in the writings, he becomes known as Rav Leib Hirsch. Aryeh Tzvi is Leib Hirsch in Yiddish. Right, and he studies under the Avnei Nezer for 5 years. So he's from 13 to 18. He's learning by the Avnei Nezer, and Avnei Nezer is a Sachachev Rebbe. He's mind blowing. Not only is he a Rebbe of really high import, in the world of Hasidus, with all the Hasidic ilk that comes along with being a Rebbe, Rabbi Yitzhi is also learning by one of the great foremost halachic minds. The Shailos Utshuvos Avnei Nezer are recognized among the strongest of the turn of the previous century, the previous century in the 1900s, for their depth, for their clarity, for their understanding of thought. And here's the teenager, Rav Aryeh Tzvi, born Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, learning by the Avnei Nezer, and he develops with the Rav, under the Avnei Nezer as a notable young Talmud Chacham. In fact, the Avnei Nezer writes in Tshuvas to his Talmud, Rav Leib Hirsch, and he writes in one of the Tshuvas, he says to him, "Wow, I could see you're really considering what I'm saying, and you're thinking rather deeply." And so, in the Avnei Nezer style, Rav Arietzi is exposed to the idea of combining the study of Gemara and Lamdos and Halacha at the same time, and Kabbalah and Hasidus all going on all at the same point in time. And this is going to shape the way that he winds up shaping the way he approaches life in that regard. And of course, the Avnei Ezer, as a recognized posek, he becomes exposed to the important issues of the day that are facing the Jewish community at large. And subsequently, he moves and marries. He marries a woman named Esther Schweitzer, and he spends the next 8 years, from 18 until 26, in the home of his father-in-law. And of course, when he moves away from his father to go live with his father-in-law's home, he winds up also leaving his Rebbe. But still, notwithstanding, he goes back to the Rebbe for Yamim Tovim, as a good chassid would normally do. It's funny, in the yeshivas, they wind up leaving the yeshiva for Yantif. Well, chassidim go to the Rebbe for Yantif. And of course, he continues the correspondence back and forth with the Avnei Nezer. So in 1910, when the Avnei Nezer passes away, he has a son who is very famous as well, who is also a well-recognized Sachet Shava Rebbe. He's known as the author of the Shem Yishmuel, or Shmuel Bornstein, and the Shem Yishmuel becomes the second Rebbe of the Sachet Shava dynasty. And the Shem Yishmuel, although more recognized for his Hasidish thought, for his thoughts on Machshava and Jewish philosophy than for the Halacha, the way his father was known, he is very, very convinced that it's crucial to develop a yeshiva. And so he establishes a yeshiva in the style of his father, the Avnei Nezer, Rabbi Avram of Sachachav, and he calls the yeshiva Beis Avram. And the Shem Yishmuel sees that he needs a Rebbe, he needs a Rosh Yeshiva. And so at the age of 27, Rav Arietzi Fromer, the Kozhen Glover, our subject tonight, is brought to be the Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshivas Beis Avram. And once he's there and he's giving shiurim on all of Shas, he decides to put some of them out. And so the first of his many works come out, and that is known as Siach HaSado. So fascinating work with a lot of essays on different sugyas and Shas. And primarily, which was a little bit odd at the time, he deals with a lot of issues concerning Hilchos Brachos and Hilchos Tefillah, which was not the normal style. Normally, you expect people to spend more, if you're a Rosh Yeshiva, you're going to talk more about issues in Seder Nashim, Gittin, and Gizubos, and Kiddushin, or issues in Jewish Choshen Mishpat law, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra. He's not worried about that. He turns around and is willing to take on this these sort of a little bit outside the box essays, and he goes ahead and he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva Beis Avram until the Sachachav dynasty is destroyed in World War I. Right? So he's continuing on as a Rosh Yeshiva at that point in time now. The family grows in the meantime, and Rav Arietzi's family goes from just him and his wife Esther to a total of six children. And when the Sachachav Yeshiva gets destroyed, so he has to go ahead and he has to find a job. So he turns around and he looks around to see what job opportunities are there. Remember, World War I decimated Europe, and certainly Poland was not exempt from being attacked and destroyed, and the Polish economy was in tatters. And so he looks around for a job, and he finds out that his uncle, Rav Yitzchok Gottenstein, was a rav in a small town in the middle of nowhere called Kozhenglov, right? And he found out that he died. And so he decides he's going to become the Kozhen Glover Rav. And the community was a very, Kozhen Glover was not a very large Jewish community. And there weren't a lot of wealthy people in the town. But notwithstanding, he needed a job. And so Rav Arietzi accepts the mantle of the Kozhen Glover Rav. And he opens a small yeshiva. But the bottom line is, this title it stays with him for the rest of his life. And thereafter, here we are in the year 2021, and we're still talking about Rav Arietzi Fromer as the Kozhen Glover Rav. Whenever we introduce him, we will always identify him as the Kozhen Glover. And he's having a little bit of difficulty in the town of Kozhen Glov without getting much of a salary. There is a dispute as to what happened to him while he was in Kozhen Glov. Something must have happened to him. There's one version says that he got into a fight with the rich man in town. In other words, the rich man in town didn't like going to the Dine Torah that he paskened. Unfortunately, it was not an uncommon theme in Europe that the people came to the Rav and they didn't like his answer. And so they decided, okay, you're not the Rav anymore. And they got rid of him. But that's one version of the story. That's a little bit more in the historical archives. In one of the updated versions about in his Sefer Eretz Tzvi, Yeshayahu Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, the Kazhan Glover himself writes, or at least whoever wrote the introduction to the Kazhan Glover Sefer, we'll see that that is also a little bit of an issue. It sounds like one of his, he had gotten into some sort of disagreement with one of his relatives who became a priest, and maybe got thrown out, not by some rich Jewish fellow, but by one of the neighbors who was a priest, who did not like the fact that the Kazhan Glover was such a goon, so he forced him out of Kazhan Glover. So he leaves out of, Kazhan Glover, and he heads to Zabrze. Zabrze is another town in Poland. And why does he go to Zabrze? Because he's looking around trying to figure out, where are the people? How do you find a community? You find like-minded people and you try to settle with them. So in Zabrze, he found a lot of Sachet Shava Hasidim, and he saw that they were in the style of lay people of Sachet Shav. Remember what I told you, students of the Avnei Nezer were always taught to be very learned and to be of high quality and high caliber, very uncharacteristic for Hasidim in Poland at that time. And so here is a wonderful town of people who are like-minded with the Kazhan Glover. And he says, look, you can go into the regular shul and have people of very massive import to be able to talk and learning with. And so they turn around and they appreciate the Kazhan Glover, and they see his brilliance and they appreciate his learning, and they also appreciate his style of delivering Torah. And so therefore he continues in that style. And what is that style? He's able to learn on the same yeshivish style with the lamdas, but at the same time he's also Hasidish, so he's able to speak with that Hasidish slavos, that love of the Hasidus. And as a result, people are running to go catch him long and far and wide. And he's also recognized as an expert in Kabbalah and in Hasidic works, which often surround Kabbalistic themes. And we find in his talks on Chumash, for instance, that many, many of the talks on the Parshios are really a lot less focused on the here and the now, and a lot more in the works of Kabbalah and Zohar HaKadosh. We also know that he's recognized by the other Hasidim as a Rebbe who gets up to say Tikkun Chatzos, to get up at midnight every single night and to say the famous Tikkun Chatzos to mourn over Yerushalayim, to mourn over the destruction of Yerushalayim. And then he would study Kabbalah very, very late at night when everybody else in Zabrze was out of sleep. And in Zabrze, the students start writing up his Divrei Torah, which is going to be important because they're going to contain much of what we have left of the writings of the Kazhan Glover. After a little while came around, the Kazhan Glover realized that he had to move out of Zabrze. Maybe the community started to move down. And so he moves not too far away to a little town called Sasnovitz. It was in Sasnovitz that he meets up with one very critical character that Stephen Rosen wrote an article about in the paper last week. And that was the famous Rav Yonah Stenzel. Rav Yonah Stenzel, who is one of his Talmidim, develops a very, very strong kesher with him. Rav Yonah Stenzel becomes very important because, as we'll see soon, he winds up becoming so close to the Rebbe that he travels with the Rebbe everywhere. If not for Rav Yonah Stenzel, we wouldn't be talking about the Kazhan Glover tonight, because the idea of a Mishnah Yomah cycle would have died out with the Holocaust. Rav Yonah Stenzel was the one who we'll see is the one who carried the mission forward and carried it even further. And so here he is in Sasnovitz. We're going back to the Kazhan Glover, that is, Rabbi Fromer. And he's still gathering admirers and Talmidim, and everyone's getting close to him. And at that point in time, Rav Meir Shapiro was sitting in a little town called Lublin. It's not a little town, actually, right? And he decided that he did not like the idea of having Talmidim having to run around all the time to go ahead and find places to live and finding food to eat. And so he decided he was going to create the granddaddy of all yeshivas, and where all the greatest minds of the present and the next generation would be educated, and every single one of their needs were going to be taken care of. And he calls that great yeshiva, Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. And as he goes ahead and develops Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, they say that the just to get into the yeshiva, you had to know 200 dapim of Shas, right? I've heard different versions, but every Talmud, once you were in the yeshiva, every Talmud was assigned a Masechta, where you had to know the Masechta cold. And every time Rav Meir Shapiro or one of the other Rashi Yeshiva would give a shir, then Rav Meir Shapiro, each guy in the yeshiva would have to check whatever the nuance was in the shir against the Masechta he was expected to know. So currently the Daf Yomi is learning Masechta Megillah. So the guy who was in charge of Megillah had to make sure whatever was being said didn't contradict any of the Mefarshim in the Megillah. And the guy who had Baba Basra had 176 stop him, right? He had to make sure that anything that was said in the yeshiva was completely true based on what the Masechta that he knew. So Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin was a pretty serious place. And Rav Meir Shapiro, who founded the Daf Yomi movement, he was a pretty serious guy. And so he decides he wants to, you know, expand the faculty. After all, it takes a lot of money to run such a yeshiva. And one of the jobs of being Rosh Yeshiva is that you have to raise the funds. And so he decides that he's going to invite Rav Arye Tzvi Fromer, the Kozhen Glavarov, to become and join the faculty of the yeshiva. And you know what Rav Arye Tzvi Fromer says? No way, Jose. He says, I have my Talmidim. I can't leave them now. I need to keep where I am. But Rav Meir Shapiro died in 1933. And at that point in time, a major debate came out. People were, you know, became the big talk of the day. Who's going to take over this massive yeshiva? Who's going to be in charge of the growth of this place? And all sorts of big names. Rav Meir Arik's name was passed around. And Rav Menachem Zemba, his name was passed around. In fact, in the early papers, the one name that seems not to have gone around was the guy who got the job. It sounds like, you know, the famous story of Har Sinai, right? That all the mountains said, you know, the Torah was going to be given on them, right? And then little Har Sinai, you know, he became the one. Well, Rav Arye Tzvi Fromer, whose name was not even in the running, all of a sudden he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, taking over and becoming the second Rosh Yeshiva in the backdrop of the famous Rav Meir Shapiro. Now, in 19, here he was supposed to take over, but in a certain point in his life, right before he took over Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin, 1935, he makes a detour trip, and he travels to Eretz Yisrael. And if you remember before, I mentioned Rav Yonah Stenzel, right? So he's accompanied by Rav Yonah Stenzel and one other Talmud, and he goes to visit Eretz Yisrael. It's very rare, usually in the Hasidic world, there was a very, especially in Poland, there was a very strong anti-Zionist stance. Part of the reason was a lot of Zionism in Europe at that point in time was a reaction to the needs and the poverty of the time and gave people something to think about. But what it was devoid of any, for the most part, it was devoid of a lot of rabbinic leadership. And it stood very much in the opposition to another element that grew in order to handle the void of connection among the Hamonam, among the regular people who were in the community. And that was also the, you know, that I refer, of course, to the Hasidish movement. So it's very rare to find a Hasidish Rebbe who was also a strong Chovev Tzion, somebody who was really, really strongly in love with Eretz Yisrael. But sure enough, what happens? Rav Arye Tzvi Fromer visits Eretz Yisrael, and he feels this tremendous love to the land. And he turns around in one of his tshuvas in the Sefer Eretz Tzvi, which he published, turned around and he writes, as though he's Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, who wrote Tzion Halo Tishali, the famous kina that we say on Tisha B'Av, the Kozhen Glover writes, I wish I would have wings. I'd fly to Eretz Yisrael. You know, I believe he's paraphrasing from Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, but again, you could see this tremendous love. And he tells Rav David Landau, who was the Rav in Tel Aviv, and the one who hosted him while he was visiting, he says, listen, I want you to know how great it is to be here. A regular day in Eretz Yisrael has the same Kedusha as Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios in outside of Eretz Yisrael. Now stop and think about that for a minute. We make brachos. We say shachianu on Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. We treat the day with such serious holiness, we can't even work. And here is here's the Kazan Glover Rebbe. Here is Rav Ari Tzvi Fromer. And what's he telling us? He's turning around and telling us, and he tells his friend, that a regular day, the opportunities, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael has the same Kedusha as Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galios. And while he's there for 4 months in 1935, and he visits Yerushalayim, and he goes up north to Meiron, and he goes and he spends a lot of time in Tel Aviv and in Bnei Brak. And then he went back to become Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. And while he was in Chachmei Lublin, he had a tremendous amount of success. He was able to sit and learn, and he was able to only be concerned about studying Torah. And it was there that he publishes the Shaos Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi, not to be confused with Sefer Eretz HaTzvi, which was written by my great Rebbe Rosh Shechter, who, by the way, was the one who introduced me to the writings of the Kazan Glover for a lot of different reasons. But Eretz Tzvi focuses a lot on Orach Chaim. And a little bit on areas of Yerideh and Ebenezer, but a lot on Orach Chaim. And it keeps getting reprinted. The first volume, the first set gets printed in Lublin. Lublin's a major city, so finding a publisher to publish was not the biggest crisis. But in the United States, where they printed a second time in 63, and the third one was done in 1975. The fourth one came out in the 1980s. It's actually the most authoritative, and by the way, the easiest of styles to read. And if you look inside, in the fourth set, you also can find a lot of his writings on Chumash and a lot of his writings on the Yamim Tovim. The ones on the Yamim Tovim are literally delicious. They eat sweeter than fruit. That's how wonderful the stuff is. And he deals with a lot of different issues. And he corresponds with a number of Talmidei Chachamim. And one theme which we're going to see is he defends Am Yisrael a lot. So again, he's a Hasidish or so. A lot of the practices he's defending are Hasidic practices. So one of the big issues that he deals with is, how is it that somebody who davens after Sosman Kriyashma is able to make the brachos of Kriyashma? Why aren't those brachos Levatala? Right. After all, technically speaking, if a person doesn't say Shema in the right time, then he can't make the brachos of Shema in the right time. Maybe he's fulfilling the obligation of learning Torah, but he can't make the brachos of Kriya Shema. And this was a longstanding held belief. It's, by the way, one of the reasons why we try so hard in the shul never to miss Osman Kriya Shema in its right place. The Kazan Glover tries desperately, not necessarily, successfully according to everybody, but certainly a beautifully written series of tshuvas where he tries to defend Am Yisrael. In the Hasidish homes, very often people would make Kiddush Shabbos by day in the little shot glasses, which is a lot less than the official size of Kiddush. And it seems sort of strange that, you pass up the opportunity to use a Friday night cup and to use wine and instead choose schnapps and a smaller amount. Well, the Kazan Glover tries to defend it. And again, in his unique style of combining both the halacha together with the chassidus and weaving them together to try to defend the practice. And often, over and over again, we find that he's there to save the masses. He's known as a Sanigor Shel Yisrael, somebody who's always trying to defend. In a different tshuva that he went back and forth, he dealt with the fact that our kids tend to wear and as adults, we tend to wear tzitzis that are too small. Technically speaking, for something to be a beged that's obligated in tzitzis, we don't wear tzitzis on a scarf, for instance. It's cold outside, we're wearing scarves. But people, most people, nobody I know puts a pair of tzitzis, even though there are four corners on a scarf. Why? Because it's the pasuk says al arba kanfos ksuscha asher techaseba, that you're supposed to put tzitzis on the four corners of a garment that you cover yourself with. So, and a scarf is not something you cover yourself with. So the Kazan Glover happened to deal with the question of the fact that many of us wear tzitzis that aren't long enough. You see the old pictures of the stipler going ahead and picking up bricks for his sukkah in Bnei Brak. you see he's wearing his tzitzis. They go all the way down. I remember my friend Rabbi Akiva Resnick used to love that picture. He used to highlight all sorts of different things that we should take away from that picture. So I remember he once showed me, he said, and above all, take a look how long his tzitzis went into his under tzitzis. In Europe already, in Poland, it wasn't so common for people to have tzitzis that a person would feel comfortable going outside in the street in. And so, notwithstanding, he tries to defend that practice. This is the style of the Kazhen Glover. Well, in 1938, the Daf Yomi finishes not its first cycle. Its first cycle finished, and Reb Meir Shapiro, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin, was still alive. But in 1938, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin had passed, Reb Meir Shapiro. The Kazhen Glover was now the Rosh Yeshiva of Chachmei Lublin. It therefore was the home base for the European celebration. And in 1938, he gets up and he delivers a very powerful, impactful message. It spans for pages. I happen to have gone through it. If you saw my message from before Shabbos, I actually quote from it towards the end of my pre-Shabbos message this week. But the Kazhen Glover gets up and at the end and he says, I guess in a certain sense, I'm the host this time, so I have permission to go a little bit longer. And he introduces an idea, and he says, look, when we founded the Daf Yomi movement, we founded the movement so that Jews around the world would be able to connect around a Daf. But, and this is a point that Chaim Pinsker picked up on, you know, in his message that he also printed, he says, not everyone is cut out for Daf Yomi. And not only that, he says, you know, Daf Yomi only covers the sections of Shas that have Gemara on it. But there are huge orders. And once you get past Masechta Brachos, the rest of Seder is Ryan. And aside from Masechta Nida, all of Seder Paros, which we're learning now, has no Gemara on it. Just Mishnayos. So this is what's supposed to happen to two-sixths, a full third of Shas Mishnayos. And so therefore he introduces the idea where he was hoping that everyone would study two Mishnayos a day. And that way, somebody who finishes the Daf Yomi cycle would also finish all of Shas. And those who couldn't, they would be able to study. How long does it take somebody to learn two Mishnayos a day? I can tell you on a personal level, most days it's under 5 minutes, right? And depending on whether you're at the 6 o'clock minyan or the 7 o'clock minyan, it can make a difference between 5 minutes and 7 minutes, right? But the bottom line is that everybody has a couple of minutes and everybody has the ability to learn Mishnayos, and it can include many, many more people. Again, another big theme that we see from the Kazhen Glover's life is that he wanted very much everyone to be involved. And so he introduces this idea. Unfortunately, immediately thereafter, we know what happened in 1939. September 1st, 1939, Germany goes ahead and invades Poland, and the Second World War began. And of course, Poland was overrun by the Nazis, and Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer and his family were sent to the Warsaw Ghetto. And while he was in the Warsaw Ghetto, he set up a yeshiva for the younger Talmidim. And he continued to study, and he continued to write more chidushim, and he wrote more of his thoughts on the Sefer Eretz Tzvi that he had written once before. And he was forced to work, like all the other men in the ghetto. And so he goes out to take a job making shoes. He's making shoes. Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, we read in this week's parasha, right? And here he is making shoes for the German soldiers on the Russian front. And he's working for a company known as the Schultz Company. And while he's making shoes, right, he was known for working in a group known as the Rabbanisha Klois, that he was working with a bunch of others who are known as in a special work unit. Who is in this unit? Take a look at the names. He's working by Rav David Bornstein, the third Sachet Shavuot Rebbe, and Rav Aryeh Tzvi Frommer, the Kazhen Glover, and the Piasetz, and the Rebbe is there. And they say Rav Menachem Zemba was in the group, Rav Clonimus Kalman, Shapiro, the Piasetz, was there, and many others as well. So here we have him, and he's working in the Warsaw Ghetto. And this lasts for 2 years. In the spring of 1942, the Warsaw Ghetto, as you know, was liquidated. And for the Frommer family, including Rav Aryeh Tzvi, They were all sent to the concentration camps. This time, not Auschwitz. He sent to Majdanek, and Majdanek is not that far away from Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. They say it's, I think, if I'm not mistaken, about 120 kilometers away from Yeshivas Chachmei Lublin. And he went into the gas chambers. He and his family were murdered in the gas chambers. And he made sure, with the last breath of his life, he made the bracha, the Kadesh Eshemo Barabim, the bracha that one makes when one recites Kiddush Hashem. So here is the life in the times of the Kazhan Glover. And when the word gets to Yerushalayim and to Tel Aviv, Yonah Stenzel finds out about the destruction. And he turns around and he says, there's got to be something I can do. And so he puts the Jews together and he says that we have to be able to do something to remember all the great Kedoshim who have died, Al Kiddush Hashem. And so he decides that he's going to restart the Mishnah Yomi idea and to see it through. And so he decides, here's Rav Yonah Stenzel, Hasidish Yerach, and what would be called today a Haredi Jew of Eretz Yisrael. But it's not enough. There aren't enough Haredim at that point in time. And he didn't want the idea just to be a Haredi idea. And so the guy next to him, who's a bank teller in Eretz Yisrael, has a very clear ability to study Mishnayos. His name was Pinchas. And he gets a job teaching Mishnayos on the radio. And he does such an incredible job. It's sweet as butter. And his last name is Kahati. So Pinchas Kahati, probably one of the most famous versions of Mishnayos and one of the great translations that exist today, is commissioned by Rav Yonah Stenzel, the Talmud of Rav Ari Tzvi Frommer, in an effort to spread the same ideas and virtues that he learned from his Rebbe, from the Kazhan Glover. Jews everywhere count. Jews, and therefore we have to be Melamed Tzvus. So again, even the writing of Kahati, which is taken from Kahati's teaching of Mishnayos in the 50s and the 60s on the radio, even all of that comes about within the nature and the style of the Kazhan Glover. So we have his style and his Jewish, and we understand the fact that we also take away the idea of being innovative in writing your Jewish, that you can mix all sorts of ideas together. You can be an expert in Lumdus and an expert in Halacha. You can be an expert in Kabbalah and Hasidus as well. And sometimes putting them all together will bring you a very unique style and a unique flavor in the way that you contribute to your study of Torah. And certainly it's something that's special and unique that comes into play as well. And of course, he's interested in making sure that everybody has a chance to study Torah Hashem. Every day we daven to say, Chalkeinu b'Torah Secha Hashem, help us find our portion in your Torah. And sometimes we say to ourselves, we're so tired. We don't have enough time in our day. We're so busy. And the Kazhan Glover turned to us, and by extension, Rav Yonah Stenzel turns to us and says, really, you don't have 5 minutes? It changes the nature of who you are and where your day is. You can't bring somebody else into it. Even kids study Mishnayos. And so if we take the lessons of the Kazhan Glover and we take the opportunities that he provided for us then, that we have been carrying forward to the year 2021, 5782, right here in beautiful Hillside, Elizabeth, New Jersey. Three cycles, Ashrenu Matul Chalkenu, right? That first cycle started on my very first year here. I was telling Rabbi Teitz that the very first time we studied the very first Mishnah became the first time unfortunately my grandmother had passed away that very day. And my parents, my mother and her sister were only two, right? There were no brothers. No one was going to be formally saying Kaddish except for the sons-in-law. So every now and then something can happen. My father can't make it to shul. My uncle might not make it to shul. My mother said, you go to shul every day. It's part of your job, right? So can you sort of arrange to have somebody say Kaddish? Rav Teitz Shalita took it upon himself, and by extension, Marvin Rosenzweig, to make sure that Kaddish should be the Kaddish at the end of the Mishnayos. Why? So I asked Rav Teitz, and he said to me, I'll tell you this much. It is no greater schus than knowing that you have Banim uvnei banim oskim b'Torah u'mitzvos. And here is the Kashan Glav Rebbe, and we are his Banim Uvnei Banim. Here's Rav Yonah Stenzel, who tells us that we stand on the shoulders of Kedoshim V'Tahorim, people who gave up their lives al Kiddush Hashem. Right? And we get the opportunity to not give up our lives al Kiddush Hashem, but to make sure our lives are Kiddush Hashem. And therefore, by extension, we get the opportunity L'Kaddish Shmo V'Rabim. So we are celebrating, and it's a huge celebration, even bigger than last week's. And Be'ezras Hashem, it's not just the completion that is the celebration. That's nice. But it's the fact that we're starting again. And that Baruch Hashem, the number of people who've told me that they are so excited that their kids are going to be able to join them in this simple project, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu. So please encourage, encourage, encourage. And Be'ezras Hashem, in 6 years' time, we'll make another siyum, but this time we'll be able to do it with Rav Aryeh Tzvi Fromer when we make the siyum where he wanted to make it, where we will do it in Yerushalayim HaBnuya Ki'ir Shechubra LaYachdav. Everyone, may we have a wonderful, terrific, terrific Shabbos, and happy learning to all.